Greetings and welcome to another episode of Good Gas Mondays. Welcome to our online community where all we do is spread good vibes. That's the kind of good gas that we want each and every member of our podcasting community to fill up on. So welcome to your gas pump. Now, I firmly believe that a Monday well done invites a week of anticipation, not fear and anxiety, positive momentum, not that sense of lethargy and inertia, and a sense of control versus feeling as though you're perpetually walking into unknown spaces, not clear and confident on your power to command those circumstances and make of them what you will. So what we say, a Monday well done invites a week of anticipation, positive momentum, and a sense of control. So let's make this your best Monday ever by meeting it with a plan and an attitude of possibility. What's in store for you this week? Or better yet, what do you have in store for this week? Because we're bringing the energy in. Are the next 7 days ready for you? Here on Good Gas Mondays, my job is to help you intimidate and conquer every week before it even begins. And that means making magic on a Monday, eating your frogs and big tasks, and then meeting each moment with a clear mind and a sense of purpose. Welcome to our community of gladiators. Let's step into the arena and earn our excellence this week. I'm Christelle Tomlinson, and it's my pleasure to pour some good gas all over you and light you a fire, a blaze for this week. Now, before we get into this conversation, and it's a spicy one, our success seed today is actually applicable for this conversation and for other conversations. Here it is. It is okay to do things just because it feels good. Now, I am big on purpose, so to hear that coming from me might set off some alarm bells and create some question signs in your mind. I am not going crazy. This is the same purpose-driven life on purpose, Christelle Tomlinson, you've come to know. But part of living life well and finding joy and happiness in life is in the doing of things that actually make you happy. You do it for no other reason except that it makes you happy. And you may not be able to find the words to describe the purpose, the benefit, the raison d'etre behind what you're doing. You just know that it feels good. And some of us have been taught, especially women, that doing things because they feel good is usually an indication that you're being frivolous, you haven't thought something through, you're wasting time, wasting money, and you're doing something bad and should be criticized and shamed out of doing it. Don't buy that story. They are selling it in the street, you know. It is on sale loud in the market. Don't buy that, because it is simply not true. You get joy and happiness out of life from doing the things that bring you joy and make you happy. And so if for no other reason except that this made me happy and so I did it, if that's the only reason you have when someone asks, well, why did you choose that? Why did you pursue that? Why did you do that? Why did you say that? Because it made me happy. And we have to, as human beings, you know, male and female, we have to get comfortable doing the things that make us feel happy. Because you know what? Sometimes it is that sensation of joy and happiness and peace and fulfillment that is the purpose. Sometimes that is the higher order thinking. That is the highest level of being expression and experiencing, feeling good, feeling in rhythm and in flow, and as though all is right with the world and with you when you are doing this. So don't build pleasure out of your productivity. Don't consider pleasure to be the antithesis of your purpose. It is not the enemy of your success. It is not a fatal flaw to do a few things just because they feel good. So let us jump right into this conversation. I know you saw the topic and went, that kind of Scooby-Doo face.
how to start speaking up in the bedroom and the boardroom. Why would she pair those two things together? Because, as you know, I'm a public speaking coach. I train men, women, teenagers to find their voice and use it courageously. In fact, my public speaking training course is called Speak with Courage. So I've spent a lot of time exploring with my clients and also doing research and reading. And I've come to the understanding that the same things that make women specifically timid about speaking up in the boardroom and in the bedroom are so eerily similar. It is amazing what we believe as women about our voice, about our worthiness, and how that informs how we show up as professionals, but how we show up as sexy vixens deserving of pleasure in our intimate sexual relationships. Now, this is still going to be a PG-13 conversation, but I'm going to tell you from now, if you are not comfortable thinking about your sexuality as women, or maybe you're beside somebody who perhaps this might not be an age-appropriate thing for them, feel free to pause this episode and listen later, or skip to another of our episodes. But I promise you that you're going to learn something from this that you can apply in the boardroom and in the bedroom. And the more we get comfortable as women talking about what we want in both spaces, it's the more successful we give ourselves the opportunity to become. So why are women so timid in the boardroom and in the bedroom? This is not the only reason, but this is a big, big reason. Men. Men seem to have the authority on sexuality and power. They have bodily autonomy. Whatever they want to do with their body, they can. And they have economic autonomy. They are free to move between most spaces, change their minds about what kind of work they want to do, and show up, and in many cases begin to own that profession, because manliness has a way of consuming the space. Masculinity and patriarchy is supported in our social structure. So men seem to have more bodily autonomy and economic authority to take up the space that they occupy. And they take it up with a sense of being deserving, of being qualified, of being right. If even just by might, they are right in the bedroom and in the boardroom. Conversely, women have had to fight for all of those things. We have had to fight for authority on our sexuality and our professional power. We don't have automatic bodily autonomy. Women across the world, including in Jamaica, are still debating, explaining, lobbying, advocating for the right to do certain things with our body. And economically, we certainly do not carry the same kind of weight. We hear much talk about a gender pay gap. It is very real. In most countries, women get 83 cents on the dollar for a work, for a job that men would get a full dollar for. So somehow the economy determines that we are deserving of less, even if we do the same work, even if we do the same work in the same time, even if we do the same work in the same time and get the same result, and even if women do more work in less time and get better results, we will still get paid less because we're women. So we've had to fight, and we remain fighting for the bodily autonomy, for the economic authority to negotiate our salary without feeling timid. And when we make advances, those wins can feel so tenuous. I paused because I wanted to find the right word. Those wins can feel tenuous, weak, slight, without substance, flimsy, negligible, fragile, shaky. At any moment it can break. At any moment that win can be turned into a loss. So our wins have a way of, even in their significance, feeling insignificant or flimsy, shaky, at risk of being broken. Because as women, we know that our wins can be taken away with one bad law, the bodily autonomy. One bad law can take that away from us. One photo in the wrong hands, one rumor that we talk too much or think too much of ourselves or disrespected somebody in power. Men do that and you say, oh, he's brave, he's a lion, he came to hunt. Women do that and we suddenly become disqualified. And so even when we win, we secure a promotion, we secure a raise, those wins feel so tenuous. Men can take their power in the boardroom and in the bedroom. That is masculine. When men do that, even women say, oh my goodness, that just inspired me. And if it's in the bedroom, you say, oh, that just turned me on. It's masculine. It's what they're meant to do, to roar. Women, on the other hand, are expected to politely negotiate theirs, not step on anybody's toes, not make anybody feel uncomfortable, out of place. We are all supposed to be friends and we're going to sing Kumbaya together, because that's how women should negotiate their power, politely. So if you're okay with engaging in conversations about how much you deserve to get paid, only if you can be polite about it, this conversation might make you uncomfortable. If you don't like pushing back and saying, no, this is not what I agreed to, this is not what I want, this does not feel good for me, if saying that makes you uncomfortable, this conversation is going to make you uncomfortable. If you're not the kind of person who is comfortable in a room saying, no, I'm not going to take minutes because I'm the only woman in the room, I'm not the only person who knows how to work a pen on a piece of paper or type up what everybody else is saying on the laptop, I'm not taking minutes. If that makes you uncomfortable, just the thought of saying, no, I'm not taking minutes in this meeting because I'm the only woman in the room, don't look at me, look at another man. If the thought of that makes you uncomfortable, this podcast episode might offend you. But if you're like me, if you are clear on the value that you bring to the table, and if you are rebuking in every tongue the take where you can get and call it enough philosophy, then stay with me, sis. Let us talk strategy. Let us talk about why women are so timid in the boardroom and in the bedroom, and how we can learn to speak up for ourselves and get more out of those experiences. The boardroom and the bedroom are about to get spicy, because you are ready to speak up for yourself in both rooms. So here is why women are timid in the bedroom and in the boardroom. Four reasons that cut across both rooms. One, they got no guidance from other women going in. Women who have occupied seats and spaces of power know that they should send the elevator back down. But when the elevator door opens, who is greeting the woman when she steps off? It must be a woman. It must be a woman who welcomes her in the space, who invites her in for some mentorship, who sits beside her in that room of power, holds her hand if necessary, speaks up to reinforce her voice. Because guess what? Women get interrupted twice as many times in the boardroom than men do. So you'll be talking and somebody cuts you off two times more often than they would cut off a man. So it helps when women who are in those spaces have negotiated and laid claim to their own piece of the pie. When another woman comes in, especially if they invited that woman in, to stand with her, shore her up, help her to straighten her spine, reaffirm her voice, add and become part of her chorus, interrupt some men on her behalf, because she will need that guidance from other women going into that room. And the same applies for the bedroom. Men are on the corner, in the barbershop, in taxis, in music, talking about sex, how they negotiate their sexual relationships with women, what they prefer, what they do not like, how they get what they want out of each encounter. And for many, it's a joke. Who come first, win. They talk about that openly. They share their experiences. They give advice. They tell you the do's and don'ts. Sometimes a lot of toxicity is wrapped up in those bits of advice. But at least men are sharing, guiding and directing what they know, which can be wrong sometimes. What they know, they're passing it on to other men women aren't doing that. So one of the first things that we find as a common reason that women are timid in the bedroom and the boardroom is because they're getting no guidance from other women as they go in to either of those rooms. So mothers, talk to your teenage daughters about sex. Now please, it is a difficult conversation to have because you don't want to sound like you're encouraging them to be loose, fast and loose. But if you don't explain to them what it means to show up with their confidence in the bedroom, with a sense of what they want and what they do not want in the bedroom, someone else is going to tell them, and quite likely it's going to be a man, and the man will not be sharing. I am hedging a bet that most men are not going to be sharing in a way that empowers the women, but in a way that allows them to get the most out of the experience, even if the woman loses in the process. So mothers, you have an opportunity to find the courage, make space, room and time to speak candidly with your girl children about sex. Don't leave it up to the movies to teach her. Don't leave it up to school to teach her. Don't leave it up to the church to teach her. And for goodness sake, don't leave it up to men to teach her. Similar rule applies for women. Help a sister out. The second reason that women are so timid in the bedroom and the boardroom is because men take up all the space. And I talked about that in the introduction. Men just come in and take up the space. The way they walk in with the bravado, the confidence, the loudness, the showmanship and showboatness. And we invite and encourage it as part of their expression of masculinity. But we never stop to think about what that then requires of women. If men are the only one allowed to step in with confidence, raise their voice, interrupt other people 2 times more than they would want to be interrupted, what role does it leave for the women? A subservient role, a soft and weaker role, a victim role. And so that is one of the reasons why women are timid. Men just come in and take up all the space. Now, I'm not criticizing men. They were taught to do that. If you realize it's unhealthy and it's toxic, you should stop. But I don't take it for granted that men showing up with confidence in those spaces is a bad thing. It just means that women must also meet them at the door, at the table, at the bedside with confidence too. Because when two confident people begin to interact with each other, one, it sharpens you. They talk about iron sharpening iron. It sharpens you because you are now called to a higher level of presence. You can't just say what you want to say and expect that the person's going to take it, take what them get. You might be up for a little opposition, a little challenge, and so your brain might have to tick a little faster. You might have to be a little more sly and cunning to get what you want out of the experience because you know you're not in the room with a weak fence. The third reason why women are so timid in the bedroom and the boardroom is imposter syndrome. We haven't been around the block enough times to earn our seat in this boardroom. So men will tell you, oh, I'm here after being the CEO of these many companies and launching these many businesses and turning over these many quarters of profit. And a woman starts to feel, well, I haven't done all of those things that he has done, so maybe I'm not qualified to be in this room. Imposter syndrome, haven't been around the block enough times. Similar thing in the bedroom. I haven't had these many sexual experiences to even know if I'm doing it right. Sis, you gotta listen to your body. Your body will tell you if it's right or wrong. It's not how many times you've been around the block. It's how many times you've been present enough to listen to what your body likes and what your body doesn't like. So that imposter syndrome that comes because you lack experience, lack length of time or length of days and months at the table, that's one of the reasons why women feel timid. And another one is that question of shame, that you have been around a lot of blocks and might be judged in the instance of your sexuality as loose, less than, unworthy. So you don't want to share too much what you know. You want to come off as timid, as the Virgin Mary. Or that you've been around a lot of blocks, but you're not trying to show up the men in the room with less experience. So you begin to feel bad that you know more than the men at the table. You earn that. Your experience, your wisdom. You earn that. Don't feel like it's a bad thing. Don't feel guilty or shameful that you come to the table with experience, whether in the bedroom or the boardroom. Challenge the men who share the table with you to learn from your experience in the same way that men would challenge women to learn from them. So those are the four reasons. We're getting no guidance from other women coming into any of those rooms. Men are already taking up all the space, and we have not been taught how to do that without being unfeminine or unladylike or impolite, which has its own consequences. We also walk in with an imposter syndrome because we haven't done it a lot. We haven't been there for as many years as they have. We think we don't deserve to be there. Or we feel guilty that we have more experience, know more, have been around more blocks, and therefore can teach them. Men, because somehow men should all be our teachers. No. It's the reason we feel timid, but we're going to break that up. So here is how you can learn to speak up in the boardroom and in the bedroom. One, do your research and know who you are in the room with. Ladies, do your research and know who you are in the room with. Is this a room full of chauvinists? And how do I challenge their toxic views on masculinity and femininity? How do I raise my voice and insist on being heard? How do I level this playing field and not allow myself to be cowed into silence? Nobody's going to cow me down into silence. But you have to know the room you're walking into. So you walk in prepared. So do your research. The same kind of research would apply with your intimate partners. Sit down and talk to them before you enter the room. What are your views on sex? What do you think it means? When we enter into an intimate space with each other, what's your goal? What are your plans for me? You know, how have you treated women before me in the bedroom? What do you like to do? What don't you like? And these are the things I like, and these are the things I do not like. Do you know how to allow a woman to get to the point of climax? Have you ever done that? Do your research and know who you're getting in the room with. Two, ask yourself, does this feel good for me? You've been saddled now with the projects because you're the newbie on the block. You're the woman in the room. They want you to take all the notes and run all the administrative wheels that need to move the train. And you have said yes to everything, and the meeting is about to close, and they're going over the final actions, and they're saying this person has this responsibility to come back with it in this time. Whoa. Does this feel good for me? I have a friend who asks that question at the end of every meeting. She will look around the room and say to the other persons in that room, does this feel good for you? We've agreed to these actions. We've delegated this your way. But does this feel good for you? Not are you capable of doing it, but does this feel good for you? Because if it doesn't feel good for you, I'm giving you an opportunity to say that and to negotiate what does feel good for you. You see the benefit of having women in the room? Women will allow you to address how you feel. But where there are no women inviting you to have that conversation, you have to ask yourself, does this feel good for me? Does this feel good for me? We have a way of asking, how can I make this feel good? In essence, contorting ourselves into the roles that are offered versus negotiating new roles for ourselves. But you have to know, said this don't feel good for you. So ask yourself, does this feel good for me in both rooms? Three, if you decide that it does not, speak up for what you believe and what you actually want. Remember, we come against the spirit of take what you can get and call it enough. We rebuke it in every tongue that is available to us when the Holy Spirit touches our body. We rebuke it and we come against it. Speak up for what you believe and what you actually want. That's your responsibility. Nobody is going to do that for you. And four, speak in shorter sentences. We're not going to be explaining and explaining and explaining what we want and what we feel and why we want it and why we feel that way. A big part of power, you know, and owning your space and your role is using your voice in sharp, brief sentences. There is power in brevity. Find short and spicy ways to say what you want to say. But speak in shorter sentences. Don't get uncomfortable whining and mumbling and explaining. And, oh, no, that's not what I mean. I think what I'm really trying to say is, and, you know, maybe if I, well, really, but if I thought, but it's not even just that, you know, it's also short sentences. Think about what you want, what you believe in, what feels good for you. And if the sentence is simply no, that is your sentence. Fight the urge to want to explain in detail until everybody understands and is comfortable with your position and what you want and what makes you feel good before you stop. Sometimes you have to just say a piece and make it a short, spicy piece. And the final tip I want to give around speaking up, I mentioned it earlier, you know, but it's to help a sister out. We have to help other women negotiate these spaces, because these are the spaces that we feel so very vulnerable when it comes to dealing with our bodies, and when it comes to talking and handling, negotiating money, pay, economic standing and power. Women are not trained from the place of little girls growing up in households, in churches, in schools. Everything about our socialization tells us to shy away from those topics. Money is a man thing. Even though so many of our households are headed by women who are making the financial decisions, money is a man thing. So men must haggle and men must negotiate and men must go out there and hunt it. That's not a woman's job to do. Listen, if you need money to eat, you need to find out how to make it, how to negotiate it, how to ask for what you want. And it really helps to have mentors, other women in those spaces, helping you to negotiate that, walking you through their own experience and what they learned, and allowing you to learn from their lessons and the breadcrumbs, as I like to call it, that they will leave behind. So be a lighthouse kind of woman, where others may be walking in the dark, and when they look up, you are the lighthouse. Your light is always on, inviting them in for a conversation, available to them if they have questions, guiding them through difficult conversations that they need to engage in the boardroom and in the bedroom. Speak up for yourself, sis. It is okay. It is okay to ask yourself, does this feel good for me? And if it doesn't, don't do it. You have nothing to lose. In fact, if you're like me and you know your worth, the people in that boardroom and bedroom are the ones who lose out. Happy Monday. Take care.
And that will do it for this episode of Good Gas Mondays. Thank you so much for tuning in. I am so happy you found us in this corner of the internet. I don't know how you did it, but you made it over here, and we are happy to have you. And if you are a returning member of our Gladiator community, thank you so much for rocking with us and helping to keep our show on the charts. It's because of you. You listen to it, you share it, you comment, you give us the reviews, you share it on your social media, and you invite other people to join our community and be blessed by our content. And we get rewarded for that by being ranked on the charts. And that's just so amazing. I'm very, very grateful for every member of our Good Gas Mondays community. So before you leave, I want to ask you a quick favor. It's going to take you 30 seconds. If you are fueled by our conversations, I'm asking you to give us a rating wherever you're listening to this podcast. And if you're feeling very charitable, you can also drop us a comment. Yes, review the podcast. It helps Apple, Google, Stitcher, Anchor, wherever you're listening to the podcast, to know that this is good stuff. And it ensures that more people will know we exist and they can join us over here in this corner of light. I'm also always happy to read those reviews inside our episode. So if you write a review, it's a guarantee we're going to read it in a future episode. I say thank you in advance for that. And please share this episode with anyone you know who could be blessed and empowered by what we discussed today. Take good care, and I'll see you again on Monday for another episode of Good Gas Mondays. Blessings.